Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthcare Business Women's Association Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm an HBA volunteer leader and your host for our program today. For those of you who do not know the HBA, it's a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of their female talent. And our program series called Career Transitions, Moving from A to Z with Success and Purpose, supports this mission by exploring real career journeys and sharing key learnings from our HBA members. So today's chapter is what I like to call From Academia to Industry. The doctor is in the house. I have as my guest Dr. Mirika Kula, who is the Director, Global Scientific Publications in the Global Medical Organization of Amgen. Mira is a global communications leader with 20 years of experience across academia and industry. She's a certified trainer and coach in social and emotional intelligence. Welcome, Mira.
Hi, Julia. Thank you. So glad to be here with you on this program.
Yeah, and we're happy to have you. Mira, you know, I love the story of the scientists. There are so many things that our scientists can do with the right guidance and the right insight. But I'm really curious. Tell me a little bit about your childhood and how it shaped you and how you got into science.
Sure. So I was born in Mumbai, India, and essentially grew up in an academic environment. So at the time I was born, my parents were working towards their PhD program in organic chemistry at the Indian Institute of Technology. So I was born into that environment, and they went on to then get their PhDs and then continue to teach at the institute. So, you know, the community, the environment, my friends, everything revolved around the academic institution. And the other piece is I am an only child, and I was raised in, I would say, a fairly highly sheltered environment and with a deep sense of spirituality and, you know, core values and always with an intent to serve. So that essentially, you know, describes, you know, how I was raised and my early years, and that, you know, went on to shape who I am today.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were born into science. And so your early exposure was all in it. It wasn't something you sought out. You were born into this type of environment and just knew that you would always go into it and follow your parents' footsteps. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely fair and accurate. And in fact, dinner conversations were around the success of a chemical reaction or success or failure. And and sincere hopes that a product would crystallize the next morning, we would go to the lab. So, yeah. It is an accurate statement.
Right. Well, I would say our dinner conversations were around Gilligan Island's episodes. So highly different background between the two of us. But I could certainly see how you got interested in being a scientist. So tell me a little bit, what about your education? So tell us a little bit about that and some of your early jobs.
Yeah, so as I was, you know, mentioning earlier, Julia, you know, I have a deep desire and passion to serve. This is from the very beginning, you know, as I was growing up. So my core goal was to go into medicine and become a physician. And that's where I first started. So, but the conversation never came up until I completed my bachelor's BS degree in chemistry and life sciences. And I had applied for entrance into medical schools, and then we had a conversation at the dinner table with my parents. And as I was saying earlier, having been raised in a sheltered environment, for my father, it was really important that I stay close to home. So, you know, he said, how about you throw in an application to the master's program in chemistry, organic chemistry, and if you get in, great. If you don't, there's still, you know, the application for medical school. And, you know, growing up in that environment, it's really not a place where we say no to our parents. Mm-hmm. And I went ahead and applied, and I was accepted into the master's program at the same institute where my parents got their PhDs and they were teaching. So the question of saying no didn't arise, Julia.
Mm-hmm.
And and that essentially led me to going to my master's program, and then subsequently that led to my joining the graduate program at the institute. And before we knew it, I was out with a PhD in organic chemistry.
Wow. And then you went back and did a postdoc. Is that true?
Yes. So I met my husband when I was doing my master's. So he was working towards his graduate degree in organic chemistry. And, mm-hmm. You know, yeah, we got married, and he accepted a postdoctoral position at the University of Tennessee Memphis Health Science Center. So he came here first, and I followed him after accepting a postdoctoral position. And this was not directly in organic chemistry. It was more drug development and analytical chemistry, but this was mm-hmm. an opportunity to use my skills and knowledge. So, so we were in Memphis for about, I would say, a little over 2 years. And then my husband accepted a second postdoc position at UCLA School of Medicine. And I followed him. So, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, you know, whether some of this was intentional or it's more about what is happening in our life, our life situations, mm-hmm. right, with our spouses and our family and our mm-hmm. environment at any given time. So, and when we moved to LA, we had our son, and I took a break for a year. So I stayed home because we didn't have family to support, you know, raising our child, our son. And then I was looking for opportunities to get back into the workforce. And there were not that many, I should say, in the field that I was, you know, skilled at. So long story short, I heard of this investigator who had received his first NIH grant for imaging, molecular mm-hmm. imaging. And he was looking for staff for his, you know, lab. And here I was, I'm looking to re-enter the workforce. So I think it's fair to say that both he and I were willing to take a chance with each other. And mm-hmm. That led to a decade-long collaboration. And we grew from, I would say, a lab of three or four, to about 22 in over 4 years.
Wow.
And, you know, he is now recognized as one of the foremost you know, experts and leaders in the field of molecular imaging. And, you know, so, yeah, it was exciting. It was an exciting time. And so that changed the course of my career, right? So I did not touch a test tube from an OChem perspective after I left my, you know, PhD work in India, and then moved on to drug development. And then I had to learn cell and molecular biology and imaging. But I think there was, you know, we're always skeptical when we accept a new role. I think it's important to keep in mind the solid grounding that we already have. And it may not be in the field that you're going into, but I think it's a key aspect to have confidence in and continue to be open to learning. So, so that essentially was my career move from, you know, my PhD program to postdoc and then to my position in academic research at UCLA.
Great. So very interesting. So it's around taking a look at your skill sets and understanding your basic skill sets and your knowledge and how to apply that into new areas that really gave you the opportunity. So, you know, although you had a specific background, you had the ability to really stretch and grow in a totally different environment. Does that sound correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. Yes. Right. So after you were with the molecular imaging at UCLA, correct? Is that
yes.
where you grew up? So then how did you get to Amgen?
Good question. Here comes another career trajectory. So, I would have continued at UCLA, Julia. My advisor, he got an offer from Stanford, and he also had some personal reasons that he needed to move up. So I worked with him to establish the, it's called the MIPS program. It's called the Molecular Imaging Program at Stanford. So, you know, helped establish the infrastructure, the labs, the floor plans, and what have you. And I also had a, had the opportunity to continue working, you know, with him, but based in Thousand Oaks because my family was here. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, I was thinking, you know, am I ready to be in a home office environment? And I really liked the interaction with people going into the office. So that was the reason I did not take that offer up. And I started looking for other positions. Now, while at UCLA, we had collaborated with Amgen on imaging a colon cancer drug. And so we had made some networks and, you know, established relationships with the cancer research division at Amgen. But I think for me, it was important to now see what else I wanted to do, because having spent almost more than 10 years at UCLA in academic research, I wanted to do something different. And there was an opening in the scientific affairs function for a medical writer, essentially. That's what it was called at that time. And as part of my tenure at UCLA, yes, you know, you work on peer-reviewed publications. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, written grants and, you know, book chapters and review articles. So writing in a peer-reviewed format wasn't new to me. And mm-hmm. the, you know, responsibilities that were required for this role at Amgen seemed to be in line with my skills and qualifications. So I applied, and this was in the inflammation therapeutic area. And I got the position, and here I am again, not exactly knowing what I'm supposed to do, but having this, wealth of expertise and experiences, you know, that I can bring along with me. And so that's how I came to Amgen, worked on inflammation, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, and worked on a couple of asthma molecules. And they didn't end up panning out, but we did get good peer-reviewed publications out of that program. And now for the last, I would say, over 6.5, close to 7 years, I'm leading a team in the cardiovascular / metabolic therapeutic area. So we are essentially, Julia, Amgen's external-facing function, and our day-to-day responsibilities include opinion leader relationship management and continually mm-hmm. working to find ways to optimally publish our clinical trial data in peer-reviewed journals and also take our data to scientific congresses. And one other key component of what I do here at Amgen is also manage our peer value communications. And as you know, access and reimbursement is mm-hmm. big and is challenging.
I do.
And there's a lot of work that needs to be done, I think, across the board in pharma in terms of communicating the value of our products. And by value, it's not just clinical or economic. It's a holistic value. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I built a team. I was the only one when I moved to cardiovascular, but I now have a team, and it's great. It's great.
Great. Wow. You know, Mira, as you transition from one role to another, and they're all very different, what are some of the skill sets that you found to be the most valuable that helped you bridge to these new opportunities?
Yeah, and I think, Julia, the first and foremost is really doubling down on our confidence in what we have learned thus far.
Okay.
And not hesitate to really go out there and talk about that. It may not be directly related to the role that you're going into, like I said earlier, but I think it really, really helps you feel settled in who you are and then continue to be open to learning. I would say these are the two factors that really helped me navigate the career transition.
Yeah, I think about it, you know, sitting and maybe creating that inventory so that you know first, so you know how to articulate that. You know, sometimes we need to be honest with ourselves and say, you know, what value do I bring? What is the experience and how that apply to other roles? And
absolutely.
It's more, right, it's more of a mindset. It's not about, they say that women will apply if they meet 100% of the qualifications. Men will apply if they meet 50%. And I think, Mira, you're probably one that will go after, you know, if you meet 50%, because you have the confidence to lean on your experience that'll get you through learning what you need to in the role.
That's
correct.
Yeah, yes, that's absolutely correct, Julia. And, you know, I can speak for myself and also a lot of other women. It's not easy to develop that confidence because we are always, you know, being who we are, we always think about, you know, I need to know everything about everything before I even have this conversation. But I think it's okay to step back and say, well, I have about 70%. I really am not sure about this other 30%, but I'm willing to learn. So here I am. I have a passion to, work in this role, and I'm open to learning and acquiring new skills. So I think it's more about that now. And the other thing I wanted to mention was having a conversation with like-minded colleagues, right? I think that's really important. Just go out there and speak to different people, and not necessarily from a perspective of really knowing how to do the job, but every conversation is a wealth of information.
I hear you. So you are a social and emotional intelligence coach, and how do you integrate EQ into your leadership and coaching style?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say for starters, Julia, it really comes down to a good understanding of who we are as individuals. Mm-hmm. And I know, we have numerous books and, you know, courses and blogs and what have you. But I think before we begin to enhance our skills in this area, it is really important to, dive deeper within ourselves and understand, you know, who we are as individuals and, you know, what value we bring to the table. And this includes the positives and the not so positives and the negatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to have that conversation with yourself, because without that, whatever else we do beyond that is going to be suboptimal in terms of how we present ourselves, right? And how much we can give to our organization, to our family, to our community. So reflection and understanding who we are is critical to begin with. And I'm coaching staff both within Amgen and outside of Amgen through my professional network. And one of the things that I see, Julia, is organizations having these soft skills courses, right? Be it active listening or negotiation, scientific presentation, emotional intelligence is one of the courses. And what mm-hmm. typically happens is you are in that course from 9 to 5, and then at the end of the course, it's a check mark, and then you talk to your manager about it. Hey, you know, I have completed this course, and it's all done and squared away. But then what? How do we measure our success in our emotional intelligence journey beyond that 9 to 5
right.
time period? And this is where, you know, I try to work with my mentees and really be there for them as a coach and walk them through the next 9 to 12 months beyond that training. So help them draft their action plan, identify their area of development, and really have conversations real time that help them to really see, you know, how is it that they are applying their learnings. And there is room for continual self-improvement. So I think that's critical, and I hope there will be a time where there is a follow-through on especially the emotional intelligence learning courses.
Hugely important, hugely important. All those courses are only a check mark if you don't apply them. Now, it sounds like you've done a lot of coaching and mentoring, and I know that you've been a true asset to the HBA. Can you tell me how you joined the HBA and a little bit about what your work there and what you're leading?
Yes, absolutely. So I was looking for opportunities or venues to get involved more with mentoring and coaching. And HBA, I had heard about HBA a long time back. I think I've been with HBA for about close to 5 years now. But And then I was looking at the venues and the platforms that HBA had to offer at that time. And, you know, fast forward now, I can see HBA being such a fantastic platform for me to serve the community and women who are early in their careers. So I started out as a mentor with the HBA SoCal program, and I am now the director at large for the 2017 mentoring program. And it's essentially about making your, you know, connections and networks and being there for mentees. And I think that I derive a lot of enrichment and purpose and, you know, satisfaction just being there for mentees and other, you know, women who are, you know, beginning their career journey. And if there's any way for me to help them and help their career advancement, I mean, I think that's what brings me the most satisfaction. It's very rewarding.
Right, it is. I think paying it forward is one of the biggest gifts we can give our members. And thank you for your support of the HBA and your leadership. So you spoke a lot about young women. So what advice do you have now for women who are earlier in their careers? It's not saying no at the dinner table, right?
No. A few points come to mind, Julia. And one of the things is, again, speaking to what I said earlier in terms of our emotional intelligence, it's about really understanding who we are, regardless of where we are in our career journey, right? We could be beginning our careers, we could be in mid-stage, but I think that, you know, a clear understanding and self-awareness is important. And after that, settling in your role. So whatever you are that you're currently doing, ensuring that we have a complete and full understanding of that role and committing to that role and, you know, fulfilling it to the best of our abilities. And the other essential piece is identifying your strengths, because I'm a strong believer in using a strengths-based approach to organizational performance and, you know, enhancing our professional performance as well. So we have settling in your role, we have identifying your strengths and leveraging your strengths for optimal performance, and being present. And, you know, there's so much going on with everything around us. It's really not that easy to be fully present at any given time, but I think actively working towards that is important. Flexibility is another key attribute, I would say. As we all know, change is the only constant. So I think flexibility is a huge attribute to have in any given role. And being open to learning, I'll end with that. And there's so much that we don't know. I am a mentee, and I think I'll continue to be a lifelong mentee. So just being open to, learning and listening and having conversations. And, you know, what I always say is it's about enriching our professional and personal lives one conversation at a time.
Absolutely. Well, Mary, it's been a delight, absolute delight talking to you. And I know that our Women in Science and Women Throughout the Age call. So thank you, and thank you for everything you've done for the HBA. We're almost out of time here, so please look for our next podcast program on communication techniques for navigating gender bias in the workplace, where we're going to explore idea theft, you know, those people that steal your ideas at meetings and pretend that they're their own. So it's going to be a fun conversation. Again, thank you, Mira, and this is HBA.
Thank you, Julia.
Out.
Thank you for having me on this program. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Take care.
And we are out.